The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Koheles warns us that as we run towards the house of Hashem, we have to be very careful. And that seems to set the stage for chapter 5. Al tibehel al picha v'libcha. Don't be hasty with your mouth and your heart to be quick. Lo tzi dvar lifnei Elohim. To say something for God. Ki Elohim b'shamayim v'ta al ha'aretz al ken yo dvarech ma'otim. When a person is in a tshuva mode and they so anxiously want to change their life, once a person realizes much of what King Solomon realizes, so we're very quick to want to make changes. And so King Solomon is warning us to be very careful with what we say. Because a dream comes with many things, and the voice of the fool is with many words. In other words, that if you really want to make real change, then it has to be integrated, determined, carefully thought out. And when a person, in a frantic attempt to change their life and make things better, they might do something rash and therefore destroy everything that they were really realized by trying to fix it all in one moment. Kasher Tidor, verse 3. When you make a vow, now one of the reasons why people make vows is to change their ways. They hope it'll be something that will enable them to overcome the Yetzer Hara. You know, it's one way of trying to overcome your evil inclination. You just take this vow. It's just added extra strength to overcome something. However, when you do that, Al ta'cher l'shalmo, ki ein chefetz b'ksilim asher tidor shalem. If you take a vow, then be quick to pay it off. Don't wait around, because the will of the fools, the fools have no wills. Fools have no stability. So now they say this, and then they say that, and then they say this, and then they say that. And they change their minds so much. Rather, what you vow, pay. Verse 4. Tov asher lo tidor misha tidor velo tishalom. And it's better that you not take a vow than take a vow and not do it. And so when a person's changing, it's very important that they have resolve and that they're really committed and they're very strong about what they believe. But nonetheless, to go into the language of neder, vow, is quite dangerous. Verse 5. Al titen et picha lachti et psarecha. Don't allow your mouth to cause damage or to cause your skin to sin. Val tomar lifnei ha-malach, and don't then say before the angel, who could simply be an agent, not an angel meaning a celestial kind of being, but an agent who comes to collect, or it could also refer to the angel of death, that a person should then later and say, Kishkagahi, it was an accident, I wasn't thinking, it was, but be very careful what you say you're going to do, do it. Lami yiksof Elohim al kolecha, why, so to speak, anger Hashem over your voice, v'hibel ma'aseh yedecha, and damage the works of your hand. And some explain, even the good works that you've done. Here you were doing mitzvot, but because you talk too much and you claim too much and you resolve too much and you weren't really integrated with what you were claiming you were going to do, but you just made these broad statements of X, Y, Z, then what happens is you bring down everything that you accomplish. Verse 6. Ki barov cholamot v'chavalim. Because in the midst of much, so to speak, in multitude are dreams and vanities. Okay? When you meet people and they're just too much, and they talk too much, and they claim too much, and there's just something about them too much, then you can know that this is a dream when it's just too much. Vavelim dvarim halbe ki et Elohim yireh. Because in multitude, in multiplicity, in abundance, are dreams and vanities and words that are much. Even so, ki et Elohim yirah, but have fear of God. Now this is the sobering factor over here, that a person must maintain a sense of yirat Hashem. reverence for Hashem. That's what's going to focus you, that's what's going to ground you, that's what's going to direct you. And unless a person has that, they'll lose touch. Alright? Im oshek rash v'gezel mishpat v'tzedek tireh. If you see the oppression of the poor, v'gezel mishpat v'tzedek tireh, and you see thievery, injustice, you see this in the state, al titma al achefet. Don't have questions about the will. In other words, I believe what King Solomon is teaching us, something that we kind of learned before, which is, here's a person doing tshuva, alright? You realize the folly of living under the sun and the ridiculous implications of that perspective. You want to do tshuva, you want to change. So you have a tendency to kind of go to the other extreme, make rash changes, ones that you aren't really ready for, and make promises that you really aren't considering well how to fulfill. In all this, a person has to have Yirat Shemayim. That will be a stabilizing force. It's this sense of fearing Hashem, a sense of reverence for Hashem. And what will happen when a person is trying to make changes? They start to become more sensitive and they have certain expectations. They think now that they have somehow accessed the beyond the sun perspective, things are going to look different. Yet they don't. All of a sudden you start seeing the poor are still being oppressed. And not only the poor, but you see the righteous, you see people doing mitzvot. So you think, oh well, gee, if I live a life of mitzvot, everything will be fine. And then you start getting involved with the mitzvah community and you start to see that, hey, it's still not fine. I still see injustice. I still see oppression. And so what happened? Al titma l'chefetz. Don't have questions about the will of God. Ki gavoim al gavoa shomer u'gvoim alehem. Because higher upon higher, He watches over, or He guards. Meaning, don't expect now that you're changing your perspectives and drawing from the light of the sun that things are going to look so different. Things might still look the same. And the only sobering factor that will keep you through it is the Yirat Hashem. It's the reverence of Hashem and the recognition that God has His plan and God has His ways. And I just don't understand. I still, although I want to draw from the light beyond the sun, I still live in the world beneath the sun. And that's the world that I will see in. So I have to be very careful, because this happens to people, and I've seen it before, where people begin to have all kinds of expectations of themselves and their life and their fate. And they think that so much is going to change, and they hope that all the externalities of things are going to confirm their decisions. But not necessarily so. Verse 8. V'yitron eretz b'chol. And the advantage of the material world, eretz b'chol, is in the allness. In other words, when you'll get the all perspective, then you'll see that everything was wonderful. And that's what we learned in Bereishit, we learned in Genesis, that God looked at all that He did, and it was tov ma'od, and it was very good. And so the Gemara tells us good refers to the good inclination, but very good refers to the bad inclination. The very is indicative of the bad inclination. And the Gemara says the very is to include pain and suffering and tragedy. So that's the very good. That all the pain and suffering within the context of the all will be understood. V'yitaron, and the advantage of the land, the material, this worldly experience, v'cholhi. It's in the whole. It's in the oneness. It's like, imagine if you're viewing a painting, and all you have is this little magnifying glass, and you're looking through the painting. So certainly as you're looking through the painting, you'd find certain places where it's really dark and harsh. But that's because you have only a very narrow perspective. But if you were to remove yourself, withdraw yourself, and look at the whole painting, what would you see? You would see that the darkness actually enhances the light. Okay? The darkness actually enhances the light. And that's from the perspective of the all. So, V'yitron eretz b'chol hi. The advantage of the land or the material is in the all. Melech l'sadeh na'avad. A king to a field has become in service. Now, what does this mean? So the Gemara says that this is referring to God. That God has, so to speak, inserviced himself, obligated himself to the land, to the field. And what is the field? Zion. And so here you are doing all these mitzvot and this and that, and then you look at the political scene in Israel, and you look at the historical things that are happening right now, and one could, in fact, be very challenged in their faith. But his answer is that the advantage of the land is in the all, and we don't have the perspective of the all. But just know that the melech l'sadeh na'avad, the king is committed to the field. He is committed to Zion. He is committed. And therefore, even though I don't see the advantage now, I don't see the benefits now, but from the all perspective, it will become clear. Because Hashem has obligated himself. And even though you don't feel that, even though you sometimes feel like God is reneging on his covenant with Am Yisrael, Yirat Hashem is essential. A sense of reverence of Hashem is essential to keep me focused and directed. Verse 9. Ohev kesev lo yispa kesev. Umi ohev behamon lo tvua gam zehevel. A person who loves money will never be satisfied with money. Okay, if that's what you love, then you'll never be satisfied with it. Because it's something we talked about before, where the Gemara says if you have $200, you want $400. You finally get the four, and you say, oh, I'll be so happy if I get the four. Ah, now you want eight. And it's hard to believe. Sometimes we say, gee, if I only had that, then everything would be fine. And then we find ourselves, when we finally get that, already we're thinking. And so when a person loves money, money is this insatiable thing. It doesn't seem that people ever have enough. They can go on and on and on and on. You wonder, how much more do you need? Yeah, they go on and on and on and on. Umi ohev bahamon, and a person who loves quantity. They like a lot. Lo tevua, there will not be productivity. Gam zehevel, you'll never feel productive because you never could do enough. Because you're basing your life and you're evaluating on muchness. How much? It's not valued on quality. It's quantity. And so, it could be that King, because the question is, what does the first have to do with what came before it? It could be that King Solomon is warning us. Here I enter into a life of mitzvah, and yet, you know what, on the outside, under the light of the sun, still things don't look so different. You know? The poor are being oppressed. There's injustice. And that injustice is also being felt on tzaddikim, on righteous people, on people who keep the Torah, people who do the mitzvah. And you say, well, gee, at least you think they'd have a good life and they wouldn't have these challenges and these painful, tragic situations. And what could happen is a person could then become disillusioned. And this I warn you because I've seen this happen to people. Because they have such high expectations of what's going to happen if they lead a life of mitzvah. Because they think that something externally is going to change rather than internally. Okay? So they can say, oh gee, you know, everyone else is happy. They're still happy. And a person has lost touch with the qualitative transformations that are happening in their lives because they're still basing their evaluation of life based on quantity, based on superficialities. And so a person could become very easily disillusioned. They could still say, hey gee, but the rich seem to have a better life. Okay? They seem to have less suffering. A person could see that. I'm sure every one of us knows a person who's very wealthy and from our perspective they're happy. It's not fair to say, oh, you know, they're not happy. They seem to be happy. They seem to be living a pretty smooth life. And so he warns us that we could become disillusioned with the spiritual life, with the life centered on our relationship to Hashem. We don't immediately see, or may never see in our life, real external reflections of that because it's ultimately internal. And it's really up to you in your sensitivities. And a person can start to think, hey, maybe the material world pays off in the end. Because it's not so obvious that the spiritual world pays off in the end. Okay? And so, he says, a person who loves money will never be happy. They'll never be satiated with money. And if a person bases their life on a having mode, having a lot, they'll never have a lot. They'll never have a lot. Birabata tova rabu ochleha. The more goodness, the more they eat. In other words, you'll never really be happy, because the more you'll have, it's like people, when I go fundraising, I always hear people complaining how everyone's knocking on their door, and how there's not a day that doesn't go by without five people from Israel knocking on the door asking for charity. So they start complaining. So you say, wow, I'm a lucky guy, because that doesn't happen around here. So if you have a lot, so then expect that there'll be a lot of people who need food knocking on your door. And so a person will never be satisfied, and they'll never be really complete, and they'll never really be serene. Because the more you have, the more people are out to get what you have. That's one way of reading this. But I want you to know that the Gemara and Rashi says that this is referring to mitzvot. Okay? That the kesef here is not material wealth, but the kesef is referring to mitzvot. And a person who loves kesef, meaning mitzvot, lo yispar kesef, they'll never be satiated with it. Umi ohev bahamon, and a person who likes a lot, will never feel productivity. And this is what I mentioned the other day. A person can get into the having mode, not only from a physical point of view, but from a spiritual point of view. And that people can take the Torah and view it with the light from beneath the sun in the same way. And then they wonder, how come it's not changing my life? Because you're really treating it like money. So before you thought if you had a lot of money, you'd be doing well. And now you think you have a lot of mitzvot, you're going to be doing well. And before you thought if you were somehow envelop yourself with plentifulness, right, abundance, then it'd be fine. And so do you feel abundant mitzvahs? Look how many mitzvahs. Oh, this person does so many mitzvahs. They're doing mitzvahs, 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 mitzvahs. You know, gather them, trade them. And that attitude is going to even bring down the mitzvahs. Because once you start to think that mitzvahs is a thing that you have to have. Like I told you the story, I was dating this woman. And I asked her, what is your vision of a beautiful day and one day of the life of your marriage? So I said, what image comes to your mind? So she said, well, I have this image, you know, when I think of it, just a beautiful, perfect kind of general day of life, is the kids come home, and on the refrigerator is a mitzvah chart. And when the kids do a mitzvah, I give them a star. And that was her vision. That's what came to her mind of like a very special family day. So I said, that's it? And she said, what do you mean, that's it? And I was really surprised that the image that comes to her mind is a mitzvah chart. Now, I'm not diminishing the importance educationally, perhaps helping children in terms of doing more mitzvahs and points and that sort of thing. But she recognized my kind of my disappointment in the image. And so she said, well, what's your image? And so I said, well, I don't know. I just want my house to be so full of light. And she said, well, that could cost a lot of electrical bills. And I said, my, we are really, we're not talking. We're simply not talking. But I started to think, you know, a lot of people have a sense, and it's not like it's unfounded in classical sources, that, you know, mitzvahs are something you add up. You add up mitzvot. There's a scale in Shemayim that God has a scoreboard, that on the great cosmic refrigerator is a mitzvah chart. And of course, in the great cosmic furnace or oven is the Avera chart, the transgression chart. And there is a feeling, and there is, educationally, I'm not saying that there is an importance to the sense of adding mitzvahs and gathering mitzvot. But something happens after a while that in your maturity, you begin, and you must begin to understand that the reward of a mitzvah is the mitzvah itself. It's the relationship with God. It's the transformation that one experiences internally in terms of defining themselves in terms of their relationship to God. So a person can come to a Shabbos table and they can see really nothing special. Because from the externality of it, when you view it from the light of the sun, right, which anybody could, then it's going to look the same. And anybody who participates in a Shabbos experience and they're just viewing it from the light of the sun, it really will be hard to see any real difference. Okay? Only a person who is involved with the experience and allows themselves to be involved with the experience is going to feel a difference. So a person is going to do mitzvot. You can do mitzvot and still have the light of the sun, and it doesn't change your life. You really don't feel like you're really making any big changes here, because you haven't. You've only taken your having attitude and applied it to the Torah. So in your materialistic world, you thought, if I had a lot, I'm bigger and better. And so you say, oh, you know, you started having a lot in the material world. You started to feel like, oh, gee, you know, it really doesn't make a big difference. And having a lot, I'm never satisfied. And so that's a good, so they're getting to a tshuva point. And so they say, oh, I'm going to go into a mitzvah life. I'm going to go into a Torah life. I'm going to go into a God-centered life. And then what happens? After a short amount of time, they start to feel like, hey, they're still not satisfied. You know, you do one mitzvah, you still want another mitzvah, and another mitzvah. And there seems to be this insatiable desire to have more and more and more and build more and more and more. And here you are learning Gemara. If you are learning Gemara, and you want one daf, now you want two daf, now you want three, you want to go through the entire Gemara. And so what's the difference? It becomes, once again, this having mode. And then later on, a person's disillusioned because they really didn't change. They really didn't change the essential attitude, which is basing your life on having a lot. And it's a question of having a lot of money or having a lot of mitzvot. But if a person bases their life on having, then they'll never have a lot. They'll never have enough. If a person bases their life, as he's about to say, "Birbot ha-tova, rabu uchleya," in the more goodness, there's the more that eat. Uma kisharon lebaalei ki'im riyat einav. And what's really the advantage to the owner, except what he sees, and it's gone. Metoka shnat ha'oved im ma'at v'im harbet. Sweet is the sleep of he who serves. And that's the problem. Unless a person understands a Torah life as a life of serving Hashem, unless they understand that, then the Torah life won't really be too much different than a material life. It's just that material spiritualism or spiritual materialism that we talked about. It really won't change unless a person gets into service mode. Okay? And that's what it says in Pirkei Avot. It says, do not serve the greater, the Rav, in order to receive a prize. Rather, serve the Rav in order not to receive a prize. Now what does that mean? A person can serve God, but really it's once again based on the having mode. I want to have a lot. And I think if I do the mitzvahs, I'm going to have a lot. Because the world is so quantitatively oriented that that's how I'll evaluate if I'm doing well. And yet the Pirkei Avot explains, serve not in order to get a prize, but serve for the sake of serving. The service of the greater is itself the greatest reward. We've talked about that before. That's the, you know, the natural tendency of all human beings. Everybody seeks to be part of something beyond themselves. Everybody, whether it's a peer group, whether it's a social status, whether it's a company, whether it's a country. But nobody thinks that they'll find happiness in and of themselves. Everybody realizes that their worth or their sense of self-worth increases to the extent that they can identify and feel identified with that which is greater. Okay? That which is greater. And therefore it depends what I perceive to be greater or what in the most striking way gives me this feeling that they're the greater. And so if all my friends are doing something one way, okay, and I perceive that that's the social group that's the greater, and I feel I'm being judged by them, so I want to satisfy them. I want to look good in their eyes. And so I want to somehow serve their interests, because I want to feel part of them. Service is the natural mode of every human being. There's no such thing as a human being that's not going to go into serve mode. Everybody's in the serve mode. And we once talked about Bob Dylan in one of his saved albums. He has a beautiful song, and it's called "You're Gonna Have to Serve Somebody." Everybody is serving somebody. It's not only the fate, it's what you're looking for. There's nobody in this world that isn't serving or seeking to serve that which is beyond themselves, because that's how you get beyond yourself. And that's how you increase your sense of self-value. And so when a person's in the having mode, again, what's the whole point? One of the major challenges of life, that we're all struggling with is that existential feeling of my apparent nothingness. When I look at the world and I look at time, I feel like nothing. And so everybody's dealing with that. Every single human being in this world, is not one person's world that is not struggling to somehow redeem themselves and feel a sense of personal adequacy. But there are two ways of doing it. One is through hoarding and collecting and having and having and having and having. So I feel, look, if I have all this, I'm really big. I've got 10 cars, I've got 13 yachts, I've got 24 mansions. Look how big I am. Look how important I am. Because I identify with money, money's identified with me, and people think that money is really valuable and really part of the greater. Okay? But we say that what gives money value, what gives money value is only when it's identified with God. And therefore on the money it says, in God we trust. Isn't that the funniest thing to put on money? In God we trust. Because money will only have value if it's identified with godly purposes and godly values, if it's something that I use to serve God with, serve higher values. So the basic problem is the same for every human being in this world. I feel like nothing. And so how do I overcome this feeling of nothing? The amazing thing is something inside me says I should overcome that feeling and that I could overcome that feeling. And so it's a question of how. So one way of doing it is just having a lot, having a lot, having a lot. I think I am a lot. The other way, which is a much more authentic way, is through service, is through serving. Because through serving, one becomes part of the greater. And so a person wants to serve their country. And that notion of service will lead to the point that a person will even feel like they're willing to die for that cause, die for that country. And that's amazing. When a person reaches a point where they're doing something, that they are so much in service of a cause or a country or reality beyond themselves, that it would maybe bring them to surrender their very life for it, now that's something worth living. That's what people feel. That which I'm willing to die for is truly worth living for. And if any history has shown, the Jewish people have been willing to die for their heritage. They're willing to die for their heritage. Our boobies and Zadies, I don't know how far back we have to go, but they had such a sense of service and love for being Jewish and God and Torah. They're willing to die for it. And anything the person's willing to die for is really something that's worth living for. But sometimes people are willing to die for very stupid causes, unfortunately. Okay? Now, experientially, it gives them a lot of energy. But unfortunately, from the perspective of the all, it might have been a waste of life. But it's still a natural tendency. Service is what everybody's doing naturally. And so, when a person becomes disillusioned with their mitzvah and they start looking at the external world and say, hey, gee, what am I really benefiting? They're happy, they're free, they're having a good time. Not me. I mean, you know, they've got it together. What's the problem? Well, once again, unless you use the light of the beyond the sun consistently, you will be disillusioned. You will be disillusioned. There's no doubt about it. Unless you enter into the life of mitzvah with a proper attitude, rather than the beneath the sun light, if you use the light of the sun and try to succeed at a life of mitzvah in the light of the sun, you won't. Forget it. You have to change your complete attitude in terms of what gives life genuine value. And that is ha'oved, the one who serves. And I have to always ask myself, how is this, what I'm doing, a service? A real service. And I want to try and make this into a service. Mituka shnat ha'oved. Sweet is the sleep of the servant. No matter if you do a lot or a little, because you never base your life on quantity. Because all you base your life is doing the will of God. And if you did the will of God, you'll be so happy. If you can get that attitude internalized, okay? But when a person bases their life on muchness, so that they'll feel like a lot, it'll never work. Whether it's muchness of money, or muchness of mitzvah, or muchness of Torah, and a person feels, oh, look how much Torah I've learned. When it's how much, it's really nothing, ultimately. Because it'll never be enough. It'll never be enough. So when a person is, you know, building, and they're building, and they're building, and they look how much I'm building. And then all of a sudden you get into a spaceship, and then you're looking at this huge complex that you spent your whole life building. And then in the spaceship, they shoot you off, and as you're looking down at your window, you see that complex in the context of the world, and you realize that it's nothing. Because when it's based on the quantitative world, in the light of the sun, and the sunlight doesn't show you quality. Sunlight only shows you quantity. It's hard to see quality. Quality is an internal experience. Quality, you have to use a whole different kind of light to really see quality. Really see quality. And so when you're in the world of quantity, it'll never be enough. Whether it's material or spiritual, it'll never be enough. But the one who serves, their sleep is sweet. Whether they did a lot or whether they did a little, because in their mind it wasn't based on quantity, it was based on what I did right now, it was a service. And that's all I have to work. That's all I worry about, is I live my life from day to day, and I make sure that what I did today was a service of the greater, of the Rav, of Hashem. And that's all I have to worry about. That's all I have to worry about. And so, Rashi brings down that Moshe Rabbeinu led the Jewish people for 40 years, and Shmuel led the people for only 10 years. And yet Shmuel is equated to Moshe Rabbeinu. But he only did 10 years, and Moshe did 40 years. It has nothing to do with quantity. It has to do with, if you did your service, you did your service. And that's all you have to worry about. Right? That's all you have to worry about. And that's the only way you evaluate, is through your service. Mitokash nata oved im ma'at vim harbeh yochal v'asava la'ashir eininu maniach lo lishon. The one who is satiated, the rich one, doesn't allow him to sleep. He doesn't have sleep. He doesn't have rest because he's still thinking more and more and more and more and more. Yesh ra'ah, verse 12. Yesh ra'ah chola ra'iti tachat ha-shemesh. There is this horrible disease that I saw under the sun. Osher shamur leba'alav l'ra'ato. Richness that has been guarded for the owner for his own detriment. In other words, there's two ways of seeing this. From a providential point of view and from the personal point of view. From the providential point of view, this person's money is doing well. They have it all. And they're not losing it. They've got a tremendous stability materially. And yet, it's all as a setup for their ultimate downfall. From the providential point of view, you can see a person and they're doing so incredibly well. Again, in the light of the sun, in the light of quantity. And they just have so much. They have so much. And yet, this itself is only to their ultimate detriment. It would have been better they didn't have so much. And there are people, I'm sure you've met and I have, too, where their riches is truly their poverty. Is truly their poverty. Va'avada osher, and in the end, he lost all his money. Okay? So he had it all, just so that he could lose it all, which would be the most, you know, devastating. Or, he didn't give tzedakah, from the personal point of view, there's a terrible disease. It's being a miser. Hoarding. Holding on. Inability to let go. To give. To use your money and your wealth for service. And what happens? This person was holding on, holding on, holding on, and then what happened? They lost it all. Bi'inyan ra, in a bad thing, in a bad matter. Va'olid ben, and then he has a son, ve'ein biyado mu'uma, and then he has absolutely nothing. What does he mean, has absolutely nothing? Then he had a son, then he had nothing. Because he doesn't have money, and he doesn't even have personal merits to give to his son. Because he had, when he had his money, he did mitzvot with it. He gave charity. Well, that nobody can take away from him. And so what he did with his money was an eternal investment that could never be lost. Never could be lost. And even though he might have lost his material wealth, he still maintained the spiritual wealth which he drew from this spiritual investment he did with his money. And so what happens? He gives birth to a son, and his son has nothing. He can't give his son material wealth, and he can't give his son spiritual wealth, because he really has nothing. Kasher yatza mi beti nimo, just as he left the womb of his mother, Arum, naked, yashuv, he will return naked. Velechet kishaba, umu'uma lo yisaba amalo shiolech biado. And this man will have nothing to take with him. Otherwise, there's nothing you could take. You came into this world naked. You will leave this world naked. And in the process, you have nothing eternal to take with you. I told you the story how my son Nuriel, every night I try to sit with my children and have them teach me some Torah, teach me some stories that they learned today. So he told me over a story how there was this group of people on a ship. And the ship was attacked by pirates. And they basically robbed the entire ship. He said, but you know what, Abba? There was a Jew on the ship. And he lost nothing. He lost nothing. Everybody else on the ship, everything was taken away. The robbers took everything. But the Jew, they took nothing because they couldn't take away from the Jew what he had. So I said, well, what did he have? He said, he had Torah and mitzvot. And that nobody can take away from you. Never. And so, a person will come into this world, halavai, if only I had those stories when I was 4 years old. Oh, if we should all merit that our children should know those kinds of stories. I'm still trying to figure out why Humpty Dumpty fell. Kasher yatza mi betin imo, just like this person left his mother's womb, you came into this world with nothing, and you will leave this world with nothing. There's only one thing you can truly acquire in this world. And that's what Judaism says, or mitzvot. It's the relationship that you experience, that you achieve through doing mitzvot. And it's the relationship with God. And everything else, who knows what will happen externally, I don't know. I can't promise nothing. No guarantees. But one thing is, life changes when a person bases their life on a relationship with God. And every time a person does a mitzvah, that means they consider God. It means they make God part of their life. It means they transform their life into a service. And it means that they transform themselves into a person who stands before God. And a person who stands before God is an absolutely different kind of person. And qualitatively, internally, they will change. They will transform. And that's not something that you can easily see in the light of the sun. If you try to look at yourself in the mirror, you'll probably look the same. Unless something happened inside, and that depends on how you approach Torah too. If you approach Torah with the light beyond the sun. Okay, so you'll come into this world with nothing, you'll leave this world nothing, and you will take nothing of your labors. Because if you thought your labors were all the material things, you really have nothing. Right? You really have nothing. It's a scene where they start singing, if you want it, here it is, come and get it. But you better hurry, because it may not last. And it's about a man who just dumped all his money into this pool with old feces and all kinds of guck inside. And he said to this person, if you want it, go get it. And I think, I didn't see the movie, someone told me. The guy jumped into this pool that was worse than a toilet just to get the money. And so there's really nothing that a person can take in this world. The only thing they can take with them are really their mitzvot, their relationship to Hashem. That nothing can interfere with. And this is a terrible, terrible disease. Kol umat sheba ken yelech umayitaron lo shemala ruach. Is everything he did, everything he came with, that's what he's going to go with. You really accomplished nothing in this world. Okay? Nothing in this world. And all your labors and all your efforts was for chasing after the wind. Verse 16. Gam kol yamav b'choshech yochal. In his whole life, he ate in darkness, v'kas, and anxiety, harbeh, v'chaliyo, v'kesev, and sickness, and frustration. Because this person put so much into these kinds of things. And so they were so aggravated by what they lost, and what they had, and what they gained. Imagine a person, they buy this beautiful car. Beautiful car, it's like $50,000. I don't even know, that's probably nothing these days. $50,000 car. A $200,000 car. And they take it out for a spin, and they park it in a parking lot, and they come out from the shopping mall, and they see a little scratch on this new car. Flips them out, no. Just drives them crazy. Was it worth it to get so crazy? Get so crazy? I once heard a funny story from Rabbi Beryl Wine. He said he was in Manhattan, and he was driving, he was looking for a place to park. So he said he's got this old beat-up car that's, I don't know, 1964 or something, some old beat-up car. And so he pulls into a parking lot in Manhattan. And right behind him is this guy with a Rolls Royce. Okay? So he's looking by, says, wow, look at that car, Rolls Royce. Anyways, he takes the ticket and he goes and he parks the car. And then he sees, he hears this fight going on. He parked his car and he hears this fight. It's the owner of the Rolls Royce with the parking attendant. And the parking attendant said, hey buddy, you can't park your car here, I'm sorry. He says, well, why can't I? He says, we don't have insurance for cars like this. I'm sorry, go find yourself somewhere else to park. So Rabbi Wein said, could you imagine the poor guy? He's going around and around, he can't find a place to park a Rolls Royce because no parking lot would take him because they don't have insurance for that kind of stuff. And so you wonder, who really has it better? Maybe just better you have a beat-up car. It works. It gets you from point A to point B. And that's what it's for. What more do you need a car for? And yet the person thinks, oh my gosh, wow. And so what does it really give me? It really only increases a person's anxiety. And they become so worried. And that's the basic teaching of Perkei Avot. Mar b'nesachim, mar b'dagim. The more you have, the more you worry about. Because the more you feel you have to lose. Verse 17. Hinei asher ra'iti ani tov. And this is what I see is the good. Asher yafe, it is nice, it is beautiful. Lachol v'lishtot. Just eat and drink. V'lirot tova b'chol amalo. And see goodness in all your labors. See the goodness in your labors. How do you show yourself these goodness? How do you see goodness in your labor? By doing good with your labors. And so the commentaries say, by giving tzedakah, by giving charity and doing kind acts. And that's the goodness, and that's the only goodness, and that's what you see a lot of people say anyways. Here they are working, but what really gives them nachas? What really gives them pleasure is when they know that their money's going to an orphanage, or they know that their money's going to support people to learn Torah and to develop their lives. She'amol tachat ha-shemesh. That a person should see the goodness in his labors that he's laboring under the sun. Mispar yemei chayav, the few days of his life. Asher natan lo Elohim. Ki uchalko. Because this is your portion. This is really yours. This only thing that will really be yours, it's the goodness that you do with what you have. It's not what you have. It's what you apply it to. If you apply what you have to mitzvot, well then that will be your eternal portion. Otherwise, the rest is going with the rest. Gam kol adam asher natan lo Elohim, and also any person that God gave them, osher nechasim, they gave them riches and possession, vishlitu lacho mimena, and he gave them dominion to eat from it, v'laseit et chelko, and to draw from it his portion. He could eat from it in this world and draw an everlasting portion into the next world. And to be happy in his labor. Not in his accomplishments, but in his accomplishing. In the work itself, be happy. Zu matat Elohim. This is God's gift. It's a real gift to find a person. It's a real gift from God to find a person who has a lot of money and is eating from it, they're enjoying it in this world, and they're using it for the eternal pleasures of the next world. That's really a gift. And so that's not so common, but that's really a gift. But ultimately, for the average person, then our goal is eat and drink. Not too much, not too little. Eat what you need, drink what you need, work hard, but work hard ultimately for God. Show yourself the goodness. Show yourself the goodness in the work that you do by applying it to the right service. Ki lo arbe
verse 19. Ki lo harbeh yiskor et yemei chayav. Because they're not many, one should remember the days of your life. Your life is not so long. One will look back and they'll say, where did it all go? Ki ha'elohim ma'aneh b'simcha libo. It is God that witnesses the genuine happiness in your heart, in the heart of man. And so when I read this, it came to mind something that Aryeh Kaplan once wrote. Aryeh Kaplan once wrote, who are you? Who is the real you? Pointing out when a person is asked to point to themselves, if I want you to just point to yourself for a second. Just point to yourself. Okay, very often people point over here. He says, but what really is the human being? He said, if we could set up a theoretical experiment, if we could do, so to speak, a brain transplant, okay? If we could do a memory transplant, in other words, if we could draw all your memories out of you and then put it into somebody else, wouldn't you still be alive? Wouldn't they then become you? So he says, this is a secret. How one can experience eternal existence. Because you will exist eternally in the memory of God if you're worth God's memory. Okay? Zachreinu l'chayim melech hafeitz b'chayim. Remember us, God, for life. What does it mean, remember us? Why should God remember me? Because it's only within the field of divine consciousness. It's only, so to speak, within the memory of God. If I did something that was truly, eternally worth the memory of God, then I will exist. I will continue to exist. I won't die. Because I am a collection of memories. And so the question is, who's going to remember? And so if my memory continues to live on in the mind of God, so to speak, then that is what it means to have eternal existence. This was of Aryeh Kaplan's idea. And so too over here, remember, the days of your life are very few. Very, very few. But who's really witnessing your life? Who's really going to remember? Where is your life truly going to exist in the everlasting? It's when you appreciate that it's God who witnesses the happiness in your heart. And what is that happiness in your heart? It's the happiness that a person will get when they base their lives on that which is genuine, which is what Torah says is serving Hashem. Chapter 6. Yesh ra'ah asher ra'iti tachat ha-shemesh. There is this terrible thing that I saw under the sun. V'rabba hi al adam. And this happens a lot. This happens a lot. Ish asher yitein lo Elohim osher unechasim. A person who God gave them, okay, riches and property, v'kavod and honor, v'einenu chaser l'nafsho. And nothing is missing from his soul. He's got nothing missing. Mikol asher yitava. Everything he could desire he had. V'lo yishletena Elohim lacho. And God will not let him have command to eat. Lachol mimeno. Ki ish nachri ochlenu. Because ultimately some stranger will eat it. Zehevo v'chale ra. This is a terrible thing. This is a terrible thing. In other words, in the last case, he talked about a person who kept all his wealth and then lost it. And then he lost it. And then he gave birth to a son and he had nothing to give his son. He had nothing physically and nothing spiritually to offer his child. Okay, but now he's saying there's another kind of story, which is terrible. It's this person has all this wealth, and he doesn't lose it. Right? He doesn't lose it. He has it, but he can't enjoy it. And somebody else is enjoying it. And this drives him crazy. You know, it's like his kids, he sees on the credit card account, kids out there having a good time, enjoying, and the father starts saying, hey, I'm not going to send you anything. I'm cutting you out of my will. I'm not going to give you any, because he feels so much resentment. Here I'm working so hard, restless nights, constant anxieties and frustration, and then my kid's enjoying it. Okay? Well, at least that. But even that doesn't happen. A stranger enjoys it. One of the commentaries say this guy gets so angry that he takes every relative out of his will. And ultimately, only a stranger ends up with his money. And so this is what can happen. People can get so angry. Their money only made them angry and bitter and selfish. They didn't even enjoy it. So what's the point of having it? My wife told me something very funny. It's a little bit tangential, but in my mother, my mother-in-law is now painting her apartment. And so my wife said, you know who's painting her apartment? I said, no, how would I know? She said, the guy is a PhD psychologist, okay? PhD in psychology, professor, okay? And my mother-in-law said, well, what are you doing? What are you doing? He said, I love painting walls. I love painting walls. You have to understand, he's a professor. He's been invited to do lectures all over the world. He's well known. He says, my wife is angry at me. She just can't understand why I'm doing this. But I'm so happy. I'm so happy. He said, you know what? Walls, they're straight. They're straight. You know? It's not like working with people. Ah, nah. You know? It's not like working with people. It's so different. You know, the wall is straight. You paint it. You clean it. It's there. You did it. It's great. And he's really happy. He's really happy. And so he's such a funny guy, because what he ultimately does is he gives free advice as a psychologist to the people that he works for. But he's really happy painting. He's really happy painting. So he said over his story, he says, I was working with this religious woman. He himself is a religious guy. He said, I was working with this religious woman, and she had problems turning her head. She could not turn her head. There was nothing physically wrong in a muscular way. Nothing wrong. He said, and I've been working with her for months and months. I can't figure out, why can't she turn her head? Why can't she turn her head? So I said to her, I realized, lady, take your shaitel off. Okay, I'm going to walk out of the room, and I want you to take your shaitel off. So she said, okay, he walked out of the room, and then he heard from behind the door, she's going, I don't believe it! I can move my neck! I can move my neck! So he said, you know what happened to this woman? She was a bala tshuva. She totally went berserko. She wants so much to do tshuva, so what does she do? She shaved her head. She became this real extreme person who shaved her head and wore a shaitel. One day she was out in the street, and somehow something happened and her shaitel fell off her head. And there she was standing in public with her bald head. And she just had such a traumatic experience. Right? From then on she didn't move her neck because she was afraid that she would lose her shaitel. Okay? He said, lady, walls, they're straight. They're just straight. You clean them. They're fine. You know, and you did it, and you did it. And he says, people, tough, tough. People, tough. So, you know, he said, what happens? What happens? This person is getting involved with all this, that, the other, and then what happens? A stranger only experiences. Im yolid ish mea v'shanim rabot. If a person will be born and they'll live 100 years, the Rav, and even more, even more than that, the nefsho lo tizba mina tova, and a person will not be satiated from goodness, and they don't know what goodness is, and they don't realize that that's it, and that's all. Just do that which is good. And Judaism says, how can I know what's good? Do the will of God. That is what is good. That's the only way I could know what is good. The gam kfura lo aitalo. And even if this person hasn't even been buried yet, Amarti tov mimeno nafal, better is the person who's stillborn. Isn't that amazing? So if you don't know the meaning of goodness, and you cannot satiate yourself on goodness, and see the pleasure in doing the good, but you get trapped up in trying to appease this one, that one, the other, trying to make yourself look good with having all this and all that, and yet you don't realize there's only one and only one thing that is really, really satiating to the soul. It's when you do good. When you do good. And when you're able to allow yourself to acknowledge you did good. And that's all. No one's asking you to do a lot. All you're being asked to is do good. Okay? And that's it. And I did good today, and I do good tomorrow. And then the question is, what is truly good? And that, of course, Judaism claims, is when I do the will of God, there is no greater goodness than that. And that's all I should be concerned with. And such will be the happy person. So, but a person who lives, they might live 1,000 years. You think longevity is the answer to happiness? People are, I want to live forever. I don't want to ever die. Great. But this person might have all these years. But in all these years, they never showed their soul genuine goodness. And so, gam kfur lo aitalo, even if they weren't ever buried, they're still alive, they're walking this world. It's better they were never born. It was never born, if that's what you'll do with your life. Ki behevel ba, because in vanity they came, b'choshech yelech, in darkness he went, b'choshech shemo yichasu. Because in darkness his name will be. And this is referring to the stillborn. Imagine the advantages of the one that wasn't born. The one that wasn't born. Because such a person, in vanity they came, meaning they died. Darkness they went, they never really saw the light. B'choshech shemo yichaseh, he never really had a name. Gam shemesh lo ra'ah, he didn't see the sun. V'lo yada nachat lizeh mizeh, and he doesn't know the difference. And therefore, if that's the kind of life that you're going to choose to live, then that's really, it's better that I was never born to live that kind of a life, because at least the stillborn doesn't know the difference between this and that. And even if a person would live 1,000 years twice over, v'tova lo ra'ah, and he never saw goodness, then just know that to one place we're all going. And so, what did I come in this world to do and to see and to feel? It's goodness. And I have to ask myself, what's really good about this, what I'm doing? Okay? Verse 7. Kol amal ha'adam lefihu, v'gam ha'nefesh lo timala. This is beautiful. Is the labor of a person only for their mouth? V'gam ha'nefesh lo timala, will you not fulfill your soul? Do you think only your body needs to eat? Don't you think your soul needs to eat? And so this is what we talked about, where Torahs and mitzvot are considered to be bread and water. And that a person, do you think that the body, that it really needs care and exercise and food and, and I have to be really concerned about my diet, right? But do you think that my soul doesn't need just as much attention? Just as much attention? What is the advantage of a wise person over a fool? That which is to a poor person he knows. To go with life. Now that's one way of reading this verse. Which is, you know what a wise person has over a fool? He knows what the poor need. And that's all. And a person who has all their PhDs and all their academic, and they don't know what a poor person needs, they're no different than a fool. If you don't understand what a poor person needs, whether it's physically or whether it's spiritually, if you cannot see the impoverished of this world and know what they need and do something for them, then you're no different than a fool. And so a person, they might know how to build, who knows, skyscrapers. They know how to build rocket ships. They can get you to the moon, but they can't help you walk planet Earth. So what's the difference? What's the point? So, ki ma yoteh l'chacham min ha'katzil, ma le'ani yodea la'haloch neged ha'chayim. A person who knows how to walk with life, that will be wisdom. And if your wisdom doesn't help you walk with life, so then what's the point? Tov mare einayim mahalech nefesh gam zehevel. Is the sight of your eyes better than the path of your soul? Is it better that you know how to see, but you don't know which way your soul should go? Gam zehevel, this is vanity. This is vanity. And this is the sad thing that's happened to our world. And it happened in his world. It's not a new problem. It's an old problem. And what's becoming a new solution was an old solution. Now living day by day and focusing on the moment, all this kind of, ultimately, if a person doesn't know the path of their soul, then what's the point? And so I base my life on what I see and how it looks and how I look. But my soul, I don't know which way it's going. I don't know which way to take my soul. Mashaya kvar nikra shemo. That which was, his name was already called. V'nodan, it's already known. Asher hu adam, you're just a person. It's already known. There's no surprises here. No matter everything, no matter what kind of name you try to build for yourself, no matter how much fame you try to establish around yourself, what was already is, the name is being called. You know what you are. You're a man. V'lo yuchal adin im shetakif mimena. And you will not be able to deal with he who is stronger than you. And so the commentaries say this is referring to the angel of death, which is, you're human, you're mortal, and a person has to realize that. And the more they realize that this is a short trip, the more they will realize that I can't waste it on things that don't have eternal value. Ki yesh dvarim harbem malbim hevel mayoter ladam. There are so many things that increase so much vanity. What more could a person ask for? And so the Midrash says something really beautiful. It says there's so many things. There are people who raise monkeys and tigers, and so he comes up with all these weird things. All the Gemara comes up with all these weird things. In other words, there's so much that people can get involved in. Did you ever go into one of these? What's the name of this? I think it's called a sharper image. Is that it? Where you go in there and you've got every kind of toy you can imagine. It's for the person who has everything. You go in there and they've got this electronic, you know, shoehorn. Now, wow, I gotta get one of those. Or you walk in there and they've got some towel that when you wipe your hand, it tells you you're clean. Wow! Now, how can I live without that? And you think to yourself, first of all, who are all these people who are thinking of all these things? Why are people spending so much time and energy, such valuable brain cells, to try and figure out some of the most strangest, ludicrous, unimportant little inventions? And then you wonder all the people that are buying this stuff. And you know, like it's a person who has everything. Well, anybody who needs these things is most probably a person who has really nothing. Because if they, I mean, it's fun, it's games. Again, you have to put it into perspective. You know, remember, it says, Bitul shel Torah hi kiyuma. Sometimes wasting time from Torah is establishing Torah. Okay, sometimes you're a person plays crazy, does, you know. That's okay when it's within the context of a Torah life. But when it's outside that, and that's all they have, and that is all they have, okay? And so you say to yourself, gee. It's like I once heard the name of the Biela Rebbe. He said, learn Torah and party. And learn Torah. Okay? Big difference. There's a very big difference when you learn Torah and party and learn Torah. And then the party has a context. Then the party has real meaning. And it's an outlet. It's fine. But he says there's so many things that people get involved in. You look around, you just see what is going on. People get involved with such little crazy things. And there's no end to this stuff. No end to trivia. Okay? And there are people who even pride themselves on trivia. He says, there's no end to that. Ki mi yodea ma tov l'adam. So tell me, who knows what is truly good for man, b'chayim in life, mispar yamei chayei hevlo. These few days of vain. V'yasem kitzel. And they will become as a shadow. Asher mi yagid. Who is it that can tell l'adam, to man, ma yechrav? Who can tell a person what will be with them after the life under the sun? You know, I was in Machane Yehuda and there's this shoemaker and he has a shoe store that's about the size of this cove right behind me. That's it. That's his life. He sits there, he's got these shelves and shelves of nails and leather and soles and this and that. And he sits there, he's got to keep it on. He sits there in this little tiny hole. I mean, tiny place. And he works all day long. This is a holy man. I say to myself, I gotta meet this man. Alright? So I take my shoes to this guy. And I talk to him. He says to me, He says to me, he tells me over the pasuk from Psalms, which is reflective of this pasuk over here, he says, life, it's like a shadow. So I said, oh yeah? He said, yes, a shadow. One moment it's over here, the next moment it's over there. That's what life is in this world. When you see your life under the sun, then it is a passing shadow. It is just a passing shadow. But when you see your life under the light of the beyond the sun, it's a shadow that passes into an eternal world. Unless a person realizes that this is the prosdor, yes, this is the hallway. This is the hallway. I don't want to diminish the importance of it. It's a beautiful hallway. It's an important hallway. It's the only way in to the palace, which is the next world. But it is important that people have some perspective on the next world. And there's things that I can do in my life that are fulfilling in this world and in the next world. And there's things that I can do in my life that I think are fulfilling in this world, but I will be very surprised because it's not so fulfilling. It's very passing, and it's certainly not fulfilling in the next world. So who knows what's good for man and what he should do with the few days of his life, a passing shadow? Who can tell man what will be after this world? And the answer is God. Only God, who has an ultimate perspective, only God can tell us really what's going to be in the next world. And that's why Judaism says one should base their life on the teachings of God, on the will of God.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.